On ABC Radio,
this is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Ahoy there, welcome aboard. It's the Big Fish and the Women's Recreational Fishing League. It's been lovely to follow its growth here on the Big Fish with the founding mother, Jo Starling. Good morning, Jo.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm really well. We spoke to one of your great Queensland people the other day, Kimmy Adams, who's a real expert on jungle perch and land-based fishing in the crocodile-infested north around Babinda, but particularly those crystal-clear mountain streams up in the rainforest, which are just so gorgeous. And she lives right in the heart of it, and such a passion. It must be great to have that network now, that women who are part of the WRFL have a fishing friend just about from the Kimberley to Hobart.
Well, absolutely, and it's funny you should mention Hobart, because I first met Kimmy down in the Huon Valley, so well down past Hobart, and she was living down there at the time. And she had joined as president of the Tasmanian chapter, which was brilliant. And then circumstances changed for her, and she found herself in Townsville and so nominated to become the Queensland president, and has since moved up to Babinda. And she's just doing such wonderful stuff. And I'm actually, just between us and I guess our listeners, I'm really excited to know that she's been on your show, because for years she's been with the league for probably 4 or 5 years now, and has been slowly building her confidence to speak in public through coming to the Tackle Show with us and doing a number of other things. So it excites me no end to know that she's spoken with you, and being on the radio is just another one of those levels that WRFL focuses on, you know, that saying that they have of you can't be what you can't see. Well, it's also I can't be what I can't hear. and the platform that you've provided, let's just face it, the platform that the Big Fish has provided to women to make sure their voice is heard, and to make sure that other women are hearing their voices, it really gives them the confidence to step up and recognise that fishing is for everyone, including them in particular. Thank you.
Thanks, Jo. It's just the great stories we get as well, and it's doubling our talent pool to give women a fair go too. And it was a great chat with Kimmy. She did really well last week, talking about the elusive and rare jungle perch and shore-based fishing at Babinda. And if people go to the podcast, just type in ABC, The Big Fish, and you'll find it. There's a picture of Kimmy holding a giant trevally that she caught off the beach. She said, the secret up here is to cast from about 10 metres back from the shore, and you're pretty right. And she caught and released this big giant trevally, and she loves surface lure for queenfish and sooty grunter or khaki grunter, as she calls them, but they're, you know, they're that lovely colour in that crystal clear water. And just a great chat. Yeah, a woman living the dream, really living the fishing dream. And it's the stories. I mean, I never knew, for example, I never knew where the term to skull drag a fish comes from. We've all seen it. We've all seen it when we've got fishing buddies and they've got the drag screwed down to 10,000 kilos and they're pulling the fish's teeth out, and you know that it's going to break off. You know, don't skull drag it. But you're off to the New England pretty soon, where a skull dragging event happened. Now I know what it means. Tell us that story.
Well, while we're here, I will give a big shout out to Rose Watanabe, who lives in the Blue Mountains. She's an absolute legend and a stalwart of the Women's Recreational Fishing League. And the story you're referring to was the first time that we went up to Dunmore Trout Waters, which is a private fishery in the Armidale region up there in the New England, near Ebor, I think it is. And Rose came along. And the event is the Learn to Fly weekend. That's our Stillwater conclave up there. And Rose came to hone her fly fishing skills. And she hooked more fish on that weekend than anybody else in the cohort, but she hadn't landed any. And everyone else had landed fish. And she was so excited when she felt weight on her line on this one particular occasion. And everyone was cheering her on. It was so much fun. And it put a real bend in her rod. And as she was coming in, it's scaling from one side to the other, and she was sure it was on. And when it came up, it was a sheep skull that she put through the eye socket. she was just so bummed, you know. It was like the biggest letdown. But she has got a fabulous photo that she provided for us of the fly in the eye.
She wants to catch the leg of lamb. Next time she'll get the whole beast.
Yeah. No, she's determined to actually pull a fish out of the water instead of just some roadkill or mudkill. But yeah, she's coming back, and it's a sellout this time. We've got 11 women coming to the Stillwater enclave up there at Dunmore Trout Waters. And so we've had to kick our – we have one male instructor. If you don't mind me just letting people know, this event is sponsored by the Sydney Fly Rodders Club. And
I'm talking to them on I think it's the 10th of August from memory.
Okay.
I have to check the diary, but yeah, very soon I'm going to have a bit of a chat with them and head up the road to say good day to them. Yeah.
Oh, beautiful! Because two of them are coming as part of their support for getting more women into fly fishing, and so they gave us a little bit of financial help, and they're also providing two instructors. One lady named Pam and a man called Gavin, and they're coming up with their fly casting gear and their fly tying gear, and they're going to help me mentor the women through. So poor old Gavin's been pushed into the lodge, and the rest of us are all dorming it in the nearby house, and it's just the most fabulous location for anyone who's looking for some private waters to fish for trout. The Dunmore Trout Waters is a supreme fishery. And they've only just stocked it again. I know we're really looking forward to an amazing trip, because I know that Kathy has just put in a whole heap of brood stock out of the hatchery. So they go and use their own funds to grab some brood stock and keep. They've got 7 dams on their property. They keep them all stocked up with healthy, oversized fish. So our girls will be able to get out there, practice their techniques, and they're bound to get. We've got 100% strike rate on the bend in the rod, just not 100% strike rate of them all coming in as trout.
It's the Big Fish with Joe Starling from the WRFL. And it was really exciting last year, I think it was, because it was the first time that our regular Coffs Coast correspondent Kendall Kramer had picked up a fly rod, and she caught a trout, and she was just hooked, wasn't she?
She was, and she's coming back again. So, and we did the same. Top 10 Karen, she came in and she got landed a lovely brown, and she's looking forward to this time catching one on her own gear. She's since gone and propped up the tackle industry with a number of purchases of fly rods, reels and lines. So that's fantastic. Her actual goal, and one of the things I'll be teaching her, I'll be working with her on a Belgian cast and working on tactics for catching bass, because she's a bass fisher. And her husband, Kev, has told her that if she's going to fish fly for bass in the tournaments that they fish together, she's going to be fishing on her own, because he's terrified. So I've got to teach her the Belgian cast.
So she doesn't hook him in the ear.
Yeah, all of that sort of thing. So whilst we do go to Dunmore for the trout, the teachings that we bring on board is fly fishing for everything, even though there's no bass there for Karen to actual catch.
There are cod and yellowbelly, though. You were saying they've stocked some of the dams now, and I just had a look at their Facebook page. There are some decent ones coming up. There's some cod that look around the 50-centimetre mark, and some big yellows as well that look beautiful. When you've got them in nice clear water, their colours are just awesome.
Yeah. Look, I think it's a fabulous business, and it's a pretty well-kept secret, unfortunately, for the owners, I would suggest, and for fishers who don't realise. And it's just fun. Like, seriously, it is just fun. It is luxurious. It is a stunning resource for us. It's a working farm, and they don't allow you to keep the fish because they've put them in, but boy, for the fun of it, it's fantastic.
Well, there are fisheries like this right through Tassie, right through Victoria. I know we've spoken to Phil Weigel quite regularly on The Big Fish, who has a lot of dams on farms. You know, it's something that could help our farmers in the New England too, if they've got some nice spring-fed, deep, cold water dams to supplement the income. We know how hard farming can be, so, that sort of passive tourism is very sustainable and very good, and takes the pressure off the streams as well. You know, they're a finite resource, aren't they? So Dutton Hatchery doing a great job helping out farmers and tourism up in that part of the world. And just a month or so ago, you had a crack at the Mallacoota Brim Tournament, the big Vic Brim Tournament. They're the black brim there, and that's another brilliant sustainable fishery, isn't it, after they got the nets out that were taking thousands of tons of fish out of that productive, sandy, sort of tanniny estuary. It's just loaded with huge brim and mulloway and giant flathead and everything else. It's an amazing fishery.
It really is. It really is. And we're very, very lucky to have it on our New South Wales doorstep, to be honest. And Rose is going to have another little cameo here as well, because during that tournament, Steve and I fished together as a team at it's the Vic Brim Classic, and it was the Mallacoota round. There was 72 boats were registered, which was their biggest field ever, but several of them had to pull out at the last minute for various reasons. But it fished with 68 teams of two.
Gee, that's a lot of boats, isn't it?
It is, and It was such a well-run event. I've got to take my hat off to Bill Hartshorn, who's been doing this for a lot of years now. But the it's so well run, and the Mallacoota one has, it's the second time I've fished it. They have a release cage under a jetty so that you can release the brim afterwards into this cage, and it shoots them down into deeper water and protects them from pelicans.
Wow, that's fantastic. And it also would show you how well they've been handled and how sustainable catch and release is, I guess, because if any fish did croak, you'd know about it. So they've got a good survival rate, have they?
Yes, absolutely. And so, mortality due to either, in the bass tournaments, mortality due to barotrauma and stuff like that is a known thing, and really, to the letter of the law of the tournaments, if your fish doesn't swim off, you're not meant to be allowed to score it. It's the same in the Vic Brim Classic. You can't score a dead fish, so this is one of the ways that they ensure that barotrauma isn't going to be a problem with the brim. Pelicans catching a tired fish and at release point and all of that is. And so this at Mallacoota, it's really great to know that you can go over to the jetty near the boat ramps, not the one down at the big jetty, but the one up in town. And there is a release trap there that you can put the fish down into and let them get away from the pelican. I think it's a great innovation.
That's really clever, isn't it? That's really,
it
really clever. It's The Big Fish with Joe Starling, and Joe and Steve have just fished in the Mallacoota Vic Brim Classic. What sort of bags were taken? Because it's just an epic brim fishery. They're not easy to catch sometimes too. They can be if they're looking to the surface, or they get wise to different lure techniques too. Bushy was telling me when Vibes came out, it was a Fisher cast, and then all of a sudden they got the idea that might have a little sting in its tail, that vibrating thing. So they do learn, because they get a lot of catch and release fishing, don't they?
They do, and they're such a long-lived species. They do carry the recall, you know. But yes, there were several 5 kilo plus bags weighed, which was just fantastic to see. And but I would like to say none of our bags were like that. After the first day, we were sitting in the top half of the field, and then we managed on the second day to completely bomb out. And we rescued from being, we thought we were going to go back with no fish whatsoever. But in the last, I think, 12:30 in the afternoon was our first fish, and we ended up weighing three and managed to drop something like 12 places in the ranking. But what I will say, your audience may remember, if they were listening back in February, March, we talked about the Ting X that we ran down here on Churros.
The whiting tournament, yes, that was very innovative.
Right.
Yeah.
It was really cool. Well, our champion mentor and champion mentee from that tournament won a team spot in this tournament that we just fished. So Rose Watanabe, hello again, Rose, and Monica Kamanadoff, Monica was the champion mentee. They both came and fished the Mallacoota rounds as well as the only all-female team. Fabulous. And it was the first time ever that Rose had even seen Mallacoota. They were dead last on the first day, having not touched a brim. Rose said to me that she is retaining the nickname she was given last time she fished a Vic Brim Classic, which was at Marlow, of being, I think they called her Seafood Basket, because she caught everything in the water.
Everything but brim. There are a lot of good flathead in there. There are a lot of good flathead. It's loaded with flathead.
That's right. She even caught a flounder, and she caught Taylor, and she caught salmon. She was just on fire for everything except brim. And then they came back the next day and both boated brim and jumped four places to not finish last. So I just want to give them a massive shout out, because sight unseen, going into a tournament like that, having to manage it all themselves and be completely new, and to come out with results like that is shows real tenacity and skill. They had no one else on the boat except themselves. They had to work it out. And I'm just incredibly proud of them.
Well, I'm just looking at the results here. They went from weighing only two fish the first day to weighing four fish for a total weight of 2.305 kilo on the second day. So
yes,
their improvement's exponential. Next time they'll bag 10 fish and top the 10 kilo mark, which
exactly.
Is that's amazing though, isn't it? 10 fish for 9.85 kilo.
Yes.
I mean, they're the winners. 4.5 kilo on the first day, 5.2 with the biggest brim, 1.175. A kilo brim is a trophy fish. And there were quite a few caught over a kilo, three or four. So it's
well,
an amazing.
Mallacoota is known for that.
Yeah, they're big. A fair dinkum kilo brim is an absolute stonker. It's a beautiful fish. A lot of tournaments now are being won by people using the special sonar that you caught your world record barramundi on. Has that been ratified, your world record barramundi?
Yes, it has. Yeah. Yes, it has.
Yeah, so well done. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I knew it was pending. So it's you're now a world record holder.
I am. Yes, very, very proud of that too. That goes on every CV.
What did he weigh? What did she weigh again?
29 kilos.
29 kilos. Do they use that same front-facing sonar that shows you the fish for the brim?
They were, yes, indeed. Yeah, and they were genuinely leveraging that.
Yeah, it'll come down in price too. I think for a lot of people, it's a little bit out of range at the moment. But as these things are developed, they tend to come down. The first fish finders were very expensive, and now you know they're very reasonable. So those things will no doubt get more sophisticated and cheaper.
Yes, I'm sure they will
as things go on. But
they're still not going to be for everyone. You know, I really enjoy it when I'm on a boat that's with it, for the novelty of it, and it's like playing a video game to me. But if it was on my boat, I think I would really miss my fishing.
Yeah, it's a bit of messing around, isn't it? You'd want to just probably better off just fanning lots of casts and doing a lot more fishing than targeting. You know, it's more targeting. It's good when the barramundi are 30 kilo. You know, like, you know, that's fair enough. But for Brim, possibly you're better off just doing what you were doing. I guess you just had standard gear.
Absolutely. And I was using my side scan. I love side scan. Steve loves down scan. So we both use our, we've got a sound, two sounders on board, not because there's two of us, but because one for the, when you're driving or at the back, and one for up the bow. And we both use them very differently, but it works fine. And we're happy with that. Just the way it has been for, you know, a couple decades. And I think, look, the reality is that in tournament fishing, if you haven't got live scope, you're not going to be in it. It's sad, but it's the truth.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's horses for courses, isn't it, if you like that.
Well, that's it.
You guys were, you're right, you were right up near the top at the start. Five fish bagged for a 3.595 kilo weight. That's a pretty good day's fishing. What happened on the second day?
Bad calls. Bad calls. That's what happened on
Steve's
the second
fault.
Day.
It was all Steve's fault.
I'm not going to say that.
No, you're a team. You don't do that. But good fun. I think that's a great fishery. If people from New South Wales want to see how a closed system should be managed and the benefits, take your Polaroids down there in the summertime and have a look at the number of trophy brim swimming across the flats. It's mind-blowing how a well-managed fishery can and be fished so sustainably with rod and line.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are just some things that the Victorian government does right.
Yeah.
I mean, I just love the fact that they've recognised the incredible commercial value, economic value of recreational fishing as a pastime, and are protecting the fish stocks to make sure that that economic value is there to benefit the entire community.
And you've got to almost point the finger at the Northern Territory, haven't you, when they worked out that a fish caught by a visiting angler was worth $700 a kilo and one caught in a gill net was seven.
Yes, absolutely.
And then they're letting that one go. Could be caught again and again. So, you know, the Northern Territory worked it out. The value of these accessible recreational fisheries far outweighs taking all the fish. We can't let you go without saying that people can come and meet you and the team from the Women's Recreational Fishing League at the Sydney Boat Show coming up.
Yes, you can. We're going to be right near the fishing stage. We've been asked by a wonderful company down on the south coast to help keep interested people entertained on the through the busy periods, and there'll be myself and some of the girls who attended the Fisher Leadership Forum coming to step up and flexercise some of their leadership skills in meeting and greeting and talking fishing to everyone who wants to listen, engage, learn, or just have a chat. So yeah, please do drop in, come and meet the wonderful superstar Rose. Talk to her about all her fishing adventures. We've got Captain Natalie McClune coming down, and Camilla Vogt from Goulburn coming down. So we're going to have a fabulous bunch of girls there ready for a chat. So if you're at the fishing stage and you've listened to someone that's in between times, just turn around and come back down and give us a bit of company. We'll look forward to it.
And there at the Sydney Showground from the 30th of July to the 2nd of August, you can meet some of those stars of the Women's Recreational Fishing League. Have a good chat. They talk a good fishing story and tight lines.
Thank you so much, Scott. See you all soon.
Good to catch up with Joe Starling on The Big Fish.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
And speaking of boats, coming up next on The Big Fish, Stinker's got a new one after Poseidon crushed his old one like an aluminium can under his heel at the Return and Earn. Stink Pot 3 is soon to hit the waves, thanks to a listener who heard about his shipwreck.
Weekend radio, where their body, how to catch them, it's on the
This is The Big Fish on ABC Radio.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find them? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Good morning, Stinker.
Hey, Scott, how you going, mate?
Good. Mate, is it fair to say that sometimes we don't know how good people are in this world until you've been through stormy, rough seas?
Well, I've certainly found a lot of good people in recent times. I think I've mentioned it before. I live in a wonderful community. I've lived here for 52 years, and really, it's been a pleasure to have lived here and to be part of it and to contribute in a positive way. And yeah, so it's all good. Everything's good. But I got a good bit of news for you. But look, I'd like to tell you a little story. It's about my boat. Now, you probably think you know everything about my boat, but you probably don't, because in fact, I bought the first one, Stink Pot, which is a 11'3". And it was on the side of the road chained to a telegraph pole 45 years ago. So that's Stinkpot 1. I bought Stinkpot 1 and I went down to Newcastle to play cricket. And the cricket was washed out, but I come home with a boat. So anyway, I had Stinkpot 1 for, it must be nearly 30 years or 25 years. And I banged into the rocks, I run it off the beach, it took off on me, it sailed out to sea by itself. I actually wrote a book about it, a kid's book, which has been very popular, kid's book. And so after a while, it basically split up the middle after I tried tar and bitumen. Oh, look, every single thing I could think of to hold it together didn't work. So we're driving along out of Soldier's Point. And this is 20-odd years ago. And there, on the side of a road, absolutely identical, sitting on the side of the road, for sale. Right, I pull over as fast as I can, race in and find the bloke and say, mate, thank you very much, that's Stink Pot 2, which is identical to Stink Pot 1. So I load her all up, I got a new motor a couple of weeks ago, and I'm going. And then, of course, you've heard all the story about how I ended up in the water for all that time, and my boat was all smashed up and everything else. So I'm without a boat, and there's not much use living in Fingal Bay without a boat.
No.
So I'm on the lookout. Well, a friend rings me up from Madawi, and he said, this was only a couple of days ago, and he said, look, he said, I think I've got a boat that you might be interested in, seeing you lost your last one. I said, all right. I've gone off to Madawi, and blow me down if it's identical, absolutely identical as the other two. I couldn't believe my eyes. It was a bit emotional, to tell you the truth.
That's because, great.
And he said, it's been in his garage for 30 years. And no one used it. And it's got an old Johnson two-stroke. And so I'm going to pick it up next week and I'll be back in action.
Ah, that's brilliant. And explain to people why you need a boat that you can handle on your own, because there's a unique circumstances there for you to launch locally. That's what it's all about, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, it probably is a bit small. I've got other friends here who launch by themselves and their boat's 13 foot with a 15 horsepower motor on it, and they handle that pretty well. And I probably could do. But it's become a bit of a tradition. And in my boat shed, there's the two boats. The first one, it's 50 years old or 45 years old, and it's beside Stinkpot 2, which has got a black eye and a few bumps, and like it's off to the, well, no, I'm not going to send it to the crunch up place.
In the sky, yes, the graveyard.
I'm going to keep it, and as a reminder of what things you don't do. So I've got two in the boat shed, And I've got another one coming next week. And they're identical. 1, 2, and 3. So, I mean, I could have got a bigger one. I could have got a bigger boat. And everyone says, get a bigger boat. Get a bigger boat. And I say, well, look, I'm happy with what I got. I've had one accident in 50 years, so that's not too bad a statistic. So I'm sort of up and ready to fire up again and keen to get going.
And they don't make that type anymore. Is that right, Stinky? Because you like the really thick aluminium plate.
I don't know whether they do or not, mate, but I haven't seen that. This one is very old, but it's in mint condition. It was never used. So even the paint's not scratched. It looks like it's brand spanking new. And I just can't wait to get back on the water again, to tell you the truth. And things are happening around the place. There's some beautiful fish being caught. There's no shortage of snapper. Snapper you can catch here all year round. As long as the conditions are right, you'll catch snapper. And that's the way it's been, as long as I can remember. There's good tailor around at the moment, big tailor, actually really big tailor. So they're all around the place. And it's the start of the lobster season, so that's also, I'm very keen to get involved in that too. I'm in shares with a bloke down the end of the road. Full steam ahead, Scott. Full steam ahead.
Oh, gee, I hope you get it in time to put your pots out, Stinker, because that's a fun thing to do at this time of year, isn't it?
Oh, well, I got the mother boat for that. I use the big boat for the lobsters. I launch it down the same spot, but I got a mate, and so the mate can help me. I use the little boat when I'm by myself, but if I've got a mate with me and he can help me, well, then I put the big boat in the corner too. Well, the big boat's only 15-footer, so it's not as if it's a monster boat.
No.
So I launch all my boats in Titty's corner, and then I'll set my traps along the coast.
Yes, that's right. When you say the big boat, people think it's something like, Greg Norman's Aussie Rules or something. It's not a luxury yacht. It's about 15 foot long with what's it got on it, 30 or 40 or something on the back, is it?
It's got a 60 on it.
60 on the back
and
now.
And that's the one I take to Broughton Island too. And it's a real good fishing boat. Like I said, it's just a fishing boat. It's got no trim, nothing fancy at all. So it's just a boat for fishing. And it's just a really good boat for fishing, but I only use it when I go to Broughton Island or when I'm lobstering. When I'm going for snapper in front of the lighthouse or when I fish the apple tree, I use the little boat. So, yeah, that's what I do. I've got another boat up at Tweed Heads too. So in all now, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4. I've got 5 boats now.
Well, I've got 3 fishing kayaks and a boat. You need the right gear. It's the Big Fish with Stinker. And there are quite a few offers, I believe, for that 11-foot, same make and same model, the Gull or whatever it's called.
Yeah, Savage Gull, yeah. I don't know whether it's still in. I don't know. I don't know whether it's still available as new. But the one I got, I'm so keen to go to Madawi again early next week. Pick it up, bring it home, and put the motor on it. It comes with a motor, and we'll see how we go. It's a funny thing. All my experiences recently, you might have thought might have dampened my enthusiasm, but not at all. I'm fired up. Yeah, but I might stay inside the harbour a little bit longer these days.
Oh, you'll be right. And there were other people who offered them up too, but this one sounds fantastic. Sounds like it's been hibernating just waiting for you. And you're going to put the face on it?
Yep, my word. I mean, the kids on the beach, they expect it. If I took a boat down the beach now, after the last 40-odd years, I'd take a boat down with a big smile on his face. If I went down there without a smile, they'd wonder what was going on. So that goes on it. Stinkpot 3 and then a big smile and then off we go again. It's a bit like a golfer's got all those different clubs in his bag for different occasions. Well, I'm sort of getting a bit like that with my boats. If I go up to Tweed Heads, I use a punt, which in very shallow water. If I go out to sea, I out abroad, and I use a 15, 16 footer. If I hang around close, I use 11 footer. So there you go. That's what you do when you're a mad fisherman.
I tell you what, a boat you can launch on your own, if it's right for your estuary or your river or your situation, you'll just do so much more fishing because you're not relying on mates to get off work and come. You just go when you want to go. And I think that's one of the big beauties of it too, Stinker.
Oh, it is. It is. Plus, I don't want to be responsible for anyone else. I mean, I'm flat out looking after myself, and I haven't been real good at that lately either. But, I can't sort of look around and try and see how everyone else is going because when you're out there, it's pretty wild and woolly. So you're bouncing around and you really haven't got time to care about anybody else.
Well, I went out with you once and I was using my beach rod and it had a very long butt section. And every time I'd strike for a fish, I'd break one of your ribs.
Well, I've got some new gear too. So I've got new gear, new line. I've got to get a few other little bits and pieces. By this time next week, I'll be out there again, I reckon.
Good luck with that. I know there were lots of offers from so many people too, and so many people offering boats and offering gear and all the rest. They're a lovely mob, Stinker, of the fishing community.
Oh, fantastic. I'm so thankful to have spent so much time of my life in Nelson Bay, Port Stephens, and particularly Fingal Bay. And I go down for a beer every Thursday night with all the locals, and they're all quite inquisitive and concerned the first week or so, but now we're just back to normal now. We talk about other things now.
Great stuff. Stinker, good luck. I hope you get back on the water really soon, and you'll have to get that pot of paint out and put the eyes and the smiley face back on Stink Pot 3. You can't keep a good fisho down. Tight lines, buddy.
Hurry, Scott.
This is The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Red kangaroos, sulfur crested cockatoos, a dirt track to the river bend. By my side, a trusted friend. The sun it had just risen, and Henry Lawson and I went fishing. Gumtree fell by flood and flow. Nature gives a glancing blow. That silence that we fell upon. That morning at that billabong. City far away, I wasn't missing. Henry Lawson and I went fishing.
It's The Big Fish, and we've got to talk about little fish as well, because they're all important. And on this great continent, we have so many unique fish species, and so many great people trying to save them as well. We've spoken about the recovery of the Macquarie perch and Galaxia and all the other rare and endangered fish in New South Wales, and people like Luke Pearce and other scientists working to save them. And it's a similar story in Queensland as well. At Edgbaston Reserve near Aramac in Queensland, a network of artesian springs are hidden among open grasslands. Water bubbles up through the rocks and through the earth to reach the surface, creating these pockets of life cut off from the surrounding waterways where amazing fish have evolved. They're home to the red-finned blue-eye fish. Not the most creative name, but a beautiful little fish nonetheless, a tiny fish. And they've narrowly survived extinction for the second time, thanks to some brilliant work by fish ecologists and people who care. Crispin Yeomans has the story.
I'm scrubbing your gumboots with a bleach solution. One of the springs on the reserve is the last natural remnant population, and it contains all of the genetic diversity that's left for redfin blue eye. So we've got some special biosecurity conditions for that spring to make sure we don't introduce any pathogens or weeds or other nasties into the spring.
Dean Gilligan is a fish ecologist, and he lives part-time on Edgbaston Reserve.
Okay, you ready to help?
The redfin blue eye is about the size of a paperclip, and it's only found here in these isolated desert springs in the centre of Queensland.
Just saw a blue eye swimming around in the shallows. There, see it? It's only about 1.5 centimetres long. It's kind of pale yellow at the back and pale blue at the front.
The red-finned blue eye was first formally recorded in 1990 on the edge of extinction. But thanks to a conservation and breeding program, the fish has been slowly brought back from the brink.
They were only in 7 springs. Within a couple of years, those 7 had dropped back to 6 and 5 and 4. And then we started translocating fish from that last population into other available springs to try and increase the number again.
The fish is now found in 16 springs in the reserve, with the water seeping up from an underground water table known as the Great Artesian Basin.
You can actually hear the bubbles coming up from underground just over there. See a male there with his little harem of females swimming around in the middle.
There you go, and I just stood up and everything moved.
Yep. They were just starting to relax and come out. And we scared the bejesus out of them again.
The surface is muddy and like walking on jelly.
Oh, it really is like walking on a waterbed, isn't it?
Yeah, you could sink into that.
Yeah, yep, a waterbed or a mattress. There's another one there. There's another one there. So that one's actually got water coming out. And see how the mud's blue? That's because the water, when it comes out of the ground, has no oxygen in it, so it's anoxic.
It's a muddy game of hide-and-seek trying to find the redfin blue eye in the shallows here.
The fish like it like that. If the fish had a choice of water that was 50 centimetres deep and water that was 2 centimetres deep, the native fish would choose the 2 centimetres. It's just the part of the spring they prefer to occupy.
Do we know why?
No. It's just that's how they've evolved and that's what they like. That said, if gambusia were in the spring or spangled perch, I know that they would prefer the deeper water. So you'd get spatial separation of the natives from the introduced fish.
The gambusia are a large invasive fish introduced here from North America to control mosquitoes. Hundreds of these predatory fish have been washed into the spring complex due to floods earlier in the year. Now they're eating all of the rare blue eye. Volunteer Sarah Butler is here. She's paused her studies in TAFE at Melbourne and she's using a scoop made from a plastic milk bottle, dipping it into the water to collect the surviving blue eye.
Sort of sitting on the outside, very dense vegetation areas. Every redfin we've caught has had some damage from gambusia with sometimes it presents as fungus, which is from scales missing, the fish gets sick. Otherwise, there can be big chunks of the tail missing. So they're physically getting beaten up, but they're also getting pushed out. So they're not in areas with good food, and their fry or their larvae or their babies are just immediately eaten.
Another volunteer, Steve Baines, has been here before, and he's using a collection technique that involves 2 small aquarium nets.
When I spot the blue eye, I put one in the water, so it's below the water, and I use the other one to gently herd the fish in. And so when I lift it up, there isn't mud and debris, there's just the fish.
The wetlands are surrounded by a steel mesh perimeter fence, which has helped to keep the isolated natural springs separate from the surrounding waterways. There hasn't been a flood this high in the 15 years that Bush Heritage has owned the reserve. Locals say it has likely happened before, and even with the barriers, it could happen again.
We know that our old strategy of 50 centimetre high fences isn't going to work in the long term. We've got to come up with something more secure. Really don't know what that is yet, but that's what we have to figure out and move forward with.
At the last remnant spring on Edgbaston, that fence is all that is keeping one of Australia's rarest fish species safe. for now.
Seriously, I'm going to have to get onto that within the next few days because that gives me the heebie-jeebies. I don't like having kombucha so close.
Great work being done there by fish ecologist Dean Gilligan and crew, speaking there to Crispian Yeomans in Western Queensland with the fight to save a beautiful and tiny little native fish, the red-finned blue-eye. It's only the size of a paperclip.
On ABC Radio, this is The Big Fish. Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listener.